Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, February 23rd, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Tom Matisse will tell us about the upcoming ALICE training event. And we'll get the details about the screening of Unbreakable, a film about extreme mountain runners. We'll talk with Tawny Buck, Executive Director of the Alaska Brain Injury Network. Members of the Peregrine Booster Club will be here to talk about their special dinner and auction at the Juno Yacht Club this Friday at 5 p.m., and we'll talk with Molly Box and Colleen Jardell about the Blue Line Boosters Club. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. There's anger among First Nations leaders in Canada after two young children died in a house fire on a reserve in Saskatchewan, which had no fire services. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, services were being provided by a nearby village, but were cut off because of an unpaid bill.
A two-year-old boy and his 18-month-old sister were at home with their grandmother on the Makwasakagan First Nation when the fire broke out. She managed to escape. The children died at the scene. No firefighters responded. Normally, firefighters from the nearby village of Loon Lake would have responded, but the village canceled its firefighting contract with the Cree community last year. Chief Richard Benn offered to pay the cost to fight each fire instead of paying an annual fee. He insists no bills were outstanding.
We've always paid them. They can't say we've never put thousands of dollars into that department, you know, and they've always showed up at every incident. We're just pissed off.
Ben acknowledges that even if the fire department had responded, it's not likely they would have arrived in time to save the two children. The Loon Lake administrator says the band paid its bills in 2013, but stopped the following spring and left a $3,300 bill still owing. The confusion over the issue reached to Ottawa and the Canadian Parliament, where an opposition parliamentarian, Nikki Ashton, was critical of the Canadian government, saying there are too many fire deaths on reserves.
People living on a First Nation in Canada are 10 times more likely to die in a housing fire than in any other.
The Aboriginal Affairs Minister says the Makwasakagan First Nation received $40,000 for fire services this year, and that records show the reserve has its own fire hall and truck. It works, but has no equipment, and the crew hasn't been trained. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
There's a new deputy superintendent at Badlands National Park who arrives on the job not only with years of experience, but with a deep cultural connection to the area. He has Lakota ties to the Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations. Jim Kent reports.
Reed Robinson spent the first 18 years of his life traveling abroad as the son of a diplomat, a second-generation National Park Service employee. Robinson says he was attracted to the job because of his father's work in the field and the security of the position. But Robinson notes the real draw was at a much deeper level.
There's these laws and these policies and these organizations and agencies set in place to manage land, whereas indigenous people around the world, which I was a first-hand witness to and a member of, understand these values in a very innate way.
Robinson is anxious to assist in management of the Badlands. He's especially looking forward to increasing communication with tribal members as the centennial of the National Park Service approaches in 2016.
You know, the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service may not be the most important thing on a tribe that's dealing with 80% unemployment, but if it can be shown that maybe we can spend a little time being a part of this process to establish a benchmark in the future of this agency.
Robinson hopes to expand tribal involvement in Badlands National Park by focusing on Lakota culture, heritage, history, and youth engagement, with a strong emphasis on learning from the original caretakers of this land. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The Navajo Nation Supreme Court has ordered the tribe's election administration to hold the presidential election as soon as possible. Friday's decision invalidates the tribal council's plan for a new election this summer. The presidential election has played out in court and government since the August primary. Candidates Joe Shirley Jr. and Chris Deschini won the primary, but Deschini was later disqualified. His Navajo language fluency was challenged. The court cited tribal code in the event of a disqualification, which requires the next highest voted candidate placed on the ballot. In this case, that would be Russell Begay. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 23rd, 2015. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and joining me in the studio now is CBJ's Emergency Programs Manager, Tom Matisse. Welcome, Tom.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming down today. And we're going to talk about ALICE and the ALICE training that's coming up on March 11th. For our listeners, why don't you tell them a little bit about what ALICE is?
Sure. ALICE is an acronym that is a system of tools that are best practices for dealing with active threat situations, whether that's an active shooter or somebody with a knife or a baseball bat. The idea behind ALICE is much like the old school programs of alert and lockdown. ALICE takes that to the next level. So it's alert, lockdown, inform, counter, and evacuate. And those are in no particular order, but the idea behind that is if there is an active threat in a building, first you need to alert everybody as to what's going on. If the threat is outside your building and or your room and you can't leave immediately, you need to lock down, which could buy you time to evacuate through a window or other means. We try to inform people as to where the threat is and what direction the threat is moving, and try to evacuate if we can, get away from that threat completely. If you're stuck in a room where you can't evacuate and that person enters the room, you have one final opportunity, and that would be to counter that person's assault. And that could be as simple as interrupting their train of thought. For example, you have what's called an OODA loop, which is your observation, orientation, decision-making before action. That's the mind process that somebody goes through. So when that person comes into the room as a threat, simply by interrupting their thought process, you can buy a little bit of time. So you could run past that person. You might be able to swarm that person, take them down, or just get out of the room if possible. The idea will always be to evacuate if possible. The question is how quickly we can do that.
And tell us about the evolution of this and the motivation for developing ALICE.
Sure. You know, originally, lockdown drills came from gang warfare, where the threat was outside the building, and when the gangs were in the street, we could lock down our schools and we could protect our kids by keeping them inside. Now that the threat has come into the building with active shooters, we recognize that once the fox is in the hen house, it's a good idea to evacuate the hen house. So it's the next progression beyond simply alerting and locking down, or Homeland Security's run, hide, fight. This tries to give us a little more tools to understand that countering is more than just fighting. It's breaking the person's train of thought, giving yourself some time, being able to evacuate different directions. So,
yeah, and you guys have been practicing in Juneau schools. It's been adopted here in Juneau. How's that been going?
You know, the police department did a great job of getting a train-the-trainer program in. We had lots of principals and administrators from the school district into that training. They've started teaching that to the teachers as well as the kids, and we're pushing that out community-wide. The idea behind the training that we've got coming up on the 11th is to allow parents to be able to see what their kids are learning in schools, to ask more questions for people who run businesses or public facilities to come hear about it as well, and understand the best practices on how we can save lives during active threat situations.
I've been hearing positive things about this sort of empowerment. What have you been hearing feedback-wise on this program?
All really good things. You know, people think about alert and lockdown, and just sitting there while an event is ongoing doesn't make sense if you can get away from the threat or if you can leave the building entirely. So really, it's refreshing and empowering to know that people have the ability to make intelligent decisions and to do what comes natural, which is fight or flight and get out of the way.
you know, God forbid it ever happens, what does that confrontation look like? You know, we hope everyone gets out of the building, but if they do have to confront somebody, what are the kind of things that you're teaching people to do?
Well, once again, evacuate if possible, lock down if you can. You don't want to have to deal with this threat. If there's absolutely no way for you to leave that room and that person enters that room, that's when the counter comes involved. At that point in time, like I said, you might want to swarm that person. If there's 5 to 7 people, you can get a hold of them, take them down. If you were able to run past them out the door, that would be fine too. Throwing objects at that person, whether it's a fire extinguisher or a chair or even a ball, something to even simply disorient them or make them focus again buys time for that next miss and allows you to be able to make an escape if possible.
Interesting. And you're going to do a community-wide workshop, right, on March 11th. We figured that out. It's a Wednesday from 5:30 to 7 at Centennial Hall. What's your sort of target demographic for that? Who do you want to come? Who would benefit from this?
You know, anybody can benefit from that. If you're ever involved in a active threat confrontation in a public environment, it's going to give you some tools to understand how to operate. The goal really is to recognize the schools are doing a great thing in pushing this out. If parents have questions and want to learn more, we want to make sure and address those questions, show them what the kids are learning. People who operate public facilities in Juneau, it's a great way to come and learn about how you can train your staffs and your people to protect your facilities as well.
Okay, so that's Wednesday, March 11th from 5:30 to 7 p.m., Alice Training. Tom, if somebody wants more information, where should they get that?
They can always call me at any time. My number is 586-0419.
Sounds good. Tom, is there anything we're missing? Anything else you want to add?
Nope, it's a great opportunity to learn more about safety and preparedness. We appreciate people coming out for it.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Opera2Go presents the delightful and whimsical opera, The Cunning Little Vixen. Animal and human creatures interact in a tale centering around a young vixen and her adventures, sung in Czech with projected English translations. The production features great singers, a corps of dancers from Juno Dance Theater, and members of the Amalga Chamber Orchestra. Open Saturday, February 28th at 7:30 p.m. with a matinee on Sunday at 3 at Thunder Mountain High School. Tickets available at the Jack, the bookstores, and online at opera2go.net.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 23rd, 2015. It's about 15 minutes after the hour, and joining me now in the studio are folks from the Community Charter School, Willie, Mary, and Arnie. Welcome, you three.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello.
Thanks for coming on to the Juno Afternoon today. And so we're going to talk about the Community Charter School and also a fundraiser that you have coming up this Wednesday night that features the film Unbreakable. Pretty exciting. So it looks like a very cool documentary. Lily, you want to start with you and tell us a little bit about life at the Community Charter School?
Well, it's a K through 8 school, so we do lots of stuff like the middle schoolers and the younger elementary schoolers do like projects and stuff together, so that's cool. We just have normal subjects and... it's a pretty small school, so that's nice. You get more like one-on-one time with teachers.
And what grade are you in?
I'm in eighth grade.
Wow, so you're off to high school next year.
Yeah.
What is your favorite area of study there at the charter school?
Probably math. I think I really like my math teacher.
Okay. Arnie, you're an eighth grader too, right?
Yeah.
So tell us about what you like most about the charter school.
Well, there's like, you know, like a lot of schools, like you have projects.
Mm-hmm.
But like as Lily said, you can do projects with other people, so you don't just have what you think or what you find. You can have like a group's perspective.
Nice.
And on Fridays we have all school centers, and that's like the whole school, so everyone does like these centers and does stuff. I know last year we had like school take-aparts where these people would bring in like mechanics or something, and then people would take them apart and see what was in them and stuff.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And Lily, you said something about you get to work with different grades as well, sort of mentorship programs, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, we have, like, reader buddies and stuff where we partner with younger kids and help them read. Or we have the seventh graders actually go downstairs and help with the 2-3 class, and they help them with their class if they're getting behind on homework or if, they read with them. And so, yeah, that's cool. We get to, like, work with younger kids.
Do you enjoy that part of it?
Yeah, it's cool. It's fun.
Do you ever see yourself being a teacher, maybe?
I don't really know a school teacher.
All right. And so, Mary, you're going to have a fundraiser, and this is for the eighth grade trip, which we should probably learn about, too.
Yes. So the kids can talk about this, but I'm going to go backwards to go forwards.
Okay.
Because also the eighth the middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th, participates in exploratories, and one of the exploratories that both Arnie and Lily participated in this year was pie and truffle making, led by Tony Newman and Joe Roth, who are parents of kids at our school. But every year, the 8th graders take a trip to Fairbanks and Denali to learn about another part of the state, ecology and natural history, and it's kind of their year-end sort of educational bonding trip as they move forward into the high school scene. But these kids were part of a team that made 600 truffles to raise money for this trip to Denali and Fairbanks, and they sold them for about $2,500 here over Valentine's Day. With the support of this community, they packaged them and made 3 different kinds of truffles. So as they raised money, it was all part of participating in what they did at school as well to benefit this trip. With the support of the community, it was really a great outcome in terms of them getting up north. So
absolutely, working for themselves to
yep.
help fund their trip.
Yeah.
So where are you all thinking about going this year exactly?
Well, on the trip, we're gonna go to Fairbanks and Denali.
Okay. And Mary might have talked a little bit about this just now, but remind us what some of the things that you're gonna do on the trip.
Well, we're going to do, like, lots of natural things, like outdoors and, like, I think, like, geology and stuff like that. And we're going to, like, some places is, like, Chena Hot Springs. They have hydroponic gardens, and we'll go on nature walks, I know, with guides, the permafrost tunnel, I think. Yeah, that's going to be really cool. I'm excited for that.
Excellent. Sort of a different ecosystem up there around Denali and Fairbanks, right? That interior. Very cool. Have either of you had a chance to be up there before?
I've been to Fairbanks twice, I think, but I've never been to Denali.
All right.
I've never been to Fairbanks or Denali.
Sounds very exciting. So the second part of this fundraiser, after the truffle sales and all that, is this film on Wednesday night. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I want to encourage everyone to come, whether you like to play outside or hang out inside, because the movie Unbreakable, the Western States 100, will sort of fit both of those tastes. It features our local elite and community-minded athlete, Jeff Rose. Jeff is actually a friend. I was running with him this morning. He has a winter running camp right now in town, even though it's not really winter here. But Jeff will be there to do a quick question and answer after the film, which actually is a documentary about the four elite athletes who were vying for this race in 2010. And it's really a cool documentary because it looks at their communities, where they trained, their perspectives, their philosophies. And even if you don't enjoy running, it's a really cool and interesting look, and the filmmaker did a really good job in highlighting each of these four people, as well as the race itself. And I really encourage you to come if you don't like running, because I want to know, I think this film really has something for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jeff's going to be there, and then we'll have a little silent auction with a lot of different outdoorsy items, as well as some nice food and desserts that people have donated. And we're going to open the doors at 6:30. The movie will be at 7 and run till about 8:30. And then talk with Jeff a little and close out our silent auction and finish things up. So
yeah, I mean, this is a big deal, right? Jeff was featured in this documentary as one of four elite runners in this very elite, difficult 100-mile race.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really imagine that. We have a pretty strong group of elite endurance athletes in this town, and I really think Jeff's been a pioneer in that, along with our sort of pioneer of running here, Glenn Frick, who passed about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Glenn's actually got a little snippet, and he's interviewed in the film. So I think the cool thing is it's personal and it's space-based, as well as it looks beyond that into sort of the persona and the head of being an endurance runner, and I'm an athlete myself, but just putting yourself in that place of using your mind and body as well as to race, it's quite a journey on many levels, and this film really covers that.
Yeah, I saw the trailer, and like you say, it really focuses on the individuals, and then there is some very cool race footage as well, and glissading down, you know, looks like these glaciers and running through the mountains and off rocks. And so, yeah, it looks like a nice balance.
But what's pretty cool about that, too, is that it features each of the home terrains of these four top athletes, whether you're in Spain with Killian or in Juneau with Jeff. So I think to see this movie and go, wow, that's where we live, because we're on the ridges in Juneau as well in a certain part of this movie, is pretty special and really kind of gives us another appreciation of our home here.
Okay, so that's this Wednesday night?
Yes,
right?
It's this Wednesday, 2 days away. So, yeah, come and have some cookies. There's a no-host bar. We really want to thank the Hangar for donating the ballroom to us. And we're going to have some desserts there just to share. And we're also going to have some as part of our silent auction, along with some other items, and the movie. And Jeff.
Yeah. All right, Arnie. Some of our listeners right now, they might not be sure if they should support you sending you up north to Denali. What would you tell them right now?
A lot of people don't have chances to travel a lot. And when you travel places, you learn things about different cultures and how people do different things. And learn a lot of different things that you wouldn't normally learn if you don't travel to those different places.
Good answer. Travel is a good thing. Lily, how about you?
Like Ernie said, yeah, I think it's really good for us to get other experiences. And also it's really good, like, community for our eighth grade class to get this like one last hurrah, like to be all together. And we are going to do all the like fundraising ourselves and make sure that everybody on the in the eighth grade class gets to go, whether they have the money or not. So we are going to make sure.
I kind of want to just also say something that I think is pretty cool about charter that I watch, because I'm a coach at Juno Douglas, but I've taught at Thunder Mountain. It's pretty cool now because the eighth grade class will go to either high school. So there's a really cool cross-fertilization of friendship that happens that's really important and valuable in our community as we grow with two schools. And I've just watched that through the years, and I feel like it's really special, and the contribution to that is neat and comes from charter as well as other organizations and clubs and sports and activities. So,
all right, Mary Ellison, thank you for coming in today. Lily and Arnie, thank you both so much. We'll see you Wednesday night at the Hangar Ballroom. What time does it start?
6:30. The doors open, and the movie will be at 7 sharp.
Great. Thanks, you three.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sprung from cages on Highway 9.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 23rd. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's about 30 minutes till the top of the hour. And on the phone with us now is the executive director of the Alaska Brain Injury Network, Tani Buck. Welcome to the show, Tani.
Thanks, Scott, for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So why don't you start, Tani, by telling us a little bit about the Alaska Brain Injury Network, and then in a minute we can talk about this conference that you're having later in the week here in Juneau.
For sure. So the Alaska Brain Injury Network is a nonprofit that serves the entire state. And we provide services for people who have suffered any type of traumatic or acquired brain injury. So anything from a concussion is one of those, you know, traumatic life-changing events. And we are here to provide resource navigation, training, education, support. We do advocacy on legislation, just sort of the whole broad range. So if you have or somebody you know or love has suffered from a brain injury, we would be the agency to contact to sort of help you with support, services, programs, training, and anything that you might need to kind of help yourself work through your recovery or whatever may significantly change in your life as a result of that.
Sure. What are some of the most common ways that people experience traumatic brain injury these days?
You know, concussion is right up there, particularly in Alaska, because we're so active. We have hockey and skiing, snow machining, ATVs, and then, you know, slips and falls on the ice. We're so active in Alaska, and it's pretty easy to slip and fall. It's simple as walking out to your car with a bag of groceries or doing something really hardcore like the iron dog, or, you know, any number of things. So that's probably the most common, which is just concussion.
Okay. And this is probably a big question, but what are some of the range of symptoms that somebody with TBI can experience?
Yeah, it's a huge range, depending on whether you just hit your head and had a concussion where you just sort of need to rest and recover, and you may have some dizziness or fatigue. And then, you know, it can go all the way to those kind of life-changing events where, you know, you're going to be hospitalized, you need rehab, and you need to learn how to walk, speech therapy, and talk again, and all of that. But what's important to know is any type of an injury to the brain requires treatment. And with concussions in particular, it's multiple concussions that can cause really significant problems for somebody. So understanding how to treat and recover a concussion and then how to prevent it from happening again and what to do if you've had multiple concussions, that can be pretty significant for somebody. And then, of course, we're always here for the folks who have the really life-changing type event that requires a lot of rehab and recovery.
Okay. So I'm sure somebody can contact you or your office to find more information about this, but you're going to be coming down to Juneau this week. You want to tell us about your trip down here?
Yes, we are. So we are holding one of our in-person board meetings on Thursday. We'll be at the Gold Belt in the Admiralty Room, and that's an all-day board meeting. But what we're doing in particular is from 4 to 4:30, we're hosting a meet and greet. So if you're interested in meeting the staff or the board members or learning more about Aiden and what we're doing, I would encourage people to come from 4 to 4:30. And then from 4:30 to 5:30, we will be collecting public testimony. So if you're really interested in perhaps Medicaid expansion and services that are available to people who have suffered from TBI, then coming to us and providing your public testimony would be really important, because all day Friday we'll be up at the Capitol talking to lawmakers and advocating for our consumers and the clients that we hear from about what services are needed and what we hope to see happen in the state.
And you mentioned from 4 to 4:30 is meet and greet the ABIN board. And I noticed on your website that 50% of your board members do experience TBI.
Yeah, they do. And I think that's really, I think that's significant and really important, is that when your board is driven by consumers, then you're getting a lot of really direct feedback about the reality of what reaching services is like in the state. And I have a fantastic board. Many of them have been serving ABIN for a long time, and we really do encourage people to come and see us. And we have a great website, alaskabraininjury.net, all of this information is on there, and also how to reach us. We have an 800 number, so if you're listening to me today and you're like, I think these people could help me or I could learn something from them, I would really encourage people to check out our website or give us a call or come see us on Thursday at the Gold Belt.
Sounds good. Again, that's from 4 to, looks like, 5:30 there at the Gold
Belt. Yeah, 4 to 4:30 is the reception. 4:30 to 5:30 is public testimony. That'll be a really interesting hour and a half for anybody who's affected by brain injury. So we encourage you to come.
Well, Tani Buck, thank you for coming on the show today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I appreciate you having me on, and we're excited to come to Juneau, and we really want to hear from people. So thanks for helping us get the word out.
Yeah, sounds good. We'll see you on Thursday.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 23rd of February, 2015. 1455, on this date, the first printing of the Gutenberg Bible began in Mainz, Germany. In China, books had been printed as early as the 9th century, but in Europe, books had been produced by hand, copied painstakingly by scribes, until Johannes Gutenberg developed the printing press with movable type. He'd been experimenting with the press for several years, printing single sheets, small grammar books, and he created an oil-based ink that would stick to the type, not the water-based, and then started producing the Gutenberg Bible, 1,300 pages on calfskin vellum, about 45 copies, and another 135 copies on paper made from recycled clothing. As the book of Samuel gives us a picture of 17th century restoration in England, including the plague of 1665 and the Great Fire of 1666, as well as the diet and relationships and social events. He began his diary January 1st, 1660. This morning I rose, put on my suit with great skirts, went to Mr. Gunning's chapel at Exeter House, where he made a very good sermon, dined at home, where my wife dressed the remains of a turkey, and in the doing of it, she burned her hand. 1927, on this date, the physicist Werner Heisenberg first described his uncertainty principle, stating that the more precisely we can determine a particle's momentum, the less we know about its position and vice versa. And it was on this day, 1987, astronomers observed a new supernova, the first visible one since 1604, the death of a blue star. It looked like a human eye in the middle of a pair of overlapping rings. Here's a poem for today by Philip Levine, Dreaming in Swedish. The snow is falling on the tall, pale reeds near the seashore, and even though in places the sky is heavy and dark, a pale sun peeps through, casting its yellow light across the face of the waves coming in. Someone has left a bicycle leaning against the trunk of a sapling and gone into the woods. The tracks of a man disappear among the heavy pines and oaks, a large-footed, slow man dragging his right foot at an odd angle as he makes for the one white cottage that sends its plume of smoke skyward. He must be the mailman. A canvas bag, half-closed, sits upright in a wooden box over the front wheel. The discreet crystals of snow seep in one at a time, blurring the address of a single letter, the one I wrote in California and mailed, though I knew it would never arrive on time. What does this seashore near Malmö have to do with us and the white cottage sealed up against the wind and the snow coming down all day without purpose or need? There is our canvas sack of answers, if only we could fit the letters to each other. A poem by Philip Levine, Dreaming in Swedish, from The Simple Truth, published by Knopf, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by LegalZoom for over 10 years, providing legal solutions for business owners, families, and individuals, including incorporation, LLCs, wills, and living trusts. LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hi, I'm Carlos Boozer. As an athlete, I had the blessing of having lots of great male role models. My father, my teachers, my coaches all encouraged me and taught me the fundamentals of the game, the same way I try to teach young people now. But as an Alaskan, I realized there's another more important skill I can model for young boys. It's respect. There's no place for violence against women in our state.
Together we can make a difference. Visit dps.alaska.gov/cdvsa.
Hi, it's about 20 minutes till the top of the hour here on Monday, February 23rd. Scott Burton, your host, and now in the studio with me is Molly Bach. She's part of the Blue Line Boosters Club. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the Blue Line Boosters Club and who you support.
The Blue Line Booster Club is the parent group for the JDHS hockey team. And basically our main job is to get together and figure out ways to fundraise to support our hockey players at JDHS.
Cool. And tell us a little bit about the hockey team. We were just talking, how many years have they been together now?
I think this is the 10th year. I could be wrong on that, but they've been doing great. The program, it seems to be growing a little bit every year. We have great coaches. We have great supportive parents. And the boys and girl did great this year. They went on to third in the region, in the conference, and then did fairly well at conference as well.
It's very cool. It's so fun to see how hockey and ice skating have all evolved since the Treadwell was put in. You've been part of the sports community here for a long time. How has the evolution looked to you?
I think in the beginning there was just a craze for it. Everybody was something new in Juneau, and now it's kind of evened out. So it's definitely important to get the word out that that this great experience of ice and skating and hockey exists. It really is a lot of fun for every age. I would encourage people to try it for the first time and get involved.
Okay. So what's Blue Line Boosters Club? What's on your radar? What do you guys got going on?
Oh, yeah. We have a really fun event happening this Friday, 8 p.m. at the Baranoff, and it's our beer and wine tasting event, and there's a silent auction and I believe in the live auction as well to help raise money for the hockey team.
And what are some things that money helps to support? I bet hockey is not cheap.
Yes, the hockey is extremely expensive. The ice time is expensive. The gear is expensive. And especially our travel. In order to play any other teams, the kids have to travel. And we also help teams come to Juneau, too, because, to be frank, they might not come if we didn't support them financially. So there's a lot of money involved.
You mentioned that we did well in conference. Tell us the size of the conference that we're in.
Well, there's I think only about four teams in our conference. That we play teams from the other conferences as well. Unfortunately, there's nobody else in Southeast for us to play. So anytime we're traveling, it's to Anchorage or Fairbanks, and it's just costly.
Sure, I bet. Okay, so this is Friday at the Baranoff, a beer and wine tasting. What time does it start?
8 o'clock.
Okay. Sounds like a lot of fun to support hockey in Juneau. Molly Box, thanks for coming on. Anything else that you'd like to add?
I think we're good. Thanks,
all right.
Scott.
Thanks, Molly.
This is Bird Note. Next time you're out walking in the snow, look to discover a few stories. The stories birds tell with their tracks. A crow will walk. Some might say swagger, across a snowy parking lot, leaving right and left steps much as a walking human would. But the juncos under a bird feeder are more likely to leave a hopping pattern of tiny footprints in side-by-side pairs. Some birds, like robins and song sparrows, even skip, imprinting asymmetrical tracks made halfway between hopping and walking. Also, look carefully for beak marks, where a bird picked up a choice morsel or probed the ground. You may even spy the sweep of wingtips against the snow where a bird took flight. Out in open country, telltale signs sometimes tell stories of life and death. You might see mouse tracks end suddenly just where you find the imprint of an owl's wings. To learn more about bird tracks and the expert trackers of the Wilderness Awareness School, you'll find links on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
It's about 10 minutes until the top of the hour, and you're listening to A June Afternoon here on Monday, February 23rd, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. Another Booster Club will be having a fundraiser this weekend, and it's Friday night at the Yacht Club at 5 p.m. They'll be having food from Randy's Rib Shack and craft beer tasting over there. The Peregrine Booster Club, who supports the local youth sports programs here in town. You can check that out. Again, 5 p.m. this Friday at the Juno Yacht Club. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we'll get the details about this Friday's Poetry Slam. We'll talk with Linda Nguyen and Kate Fearer about this week's Alaska State Library Association's annual conference. We'll get the details about Saturday's Read Across America event at DZ. And Kristen Garreau will be the guest to announce the Montessori Borealis Public School Open House Information Meetings, which will occur later this week. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more here on a Juno Afternoon. It's currently 42 degrees at the Juno Airport. And let's take a look at the weather here. Tonight, patchy fog, rain likely in the evening, then scattered rain showers late, lows around 36. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, scattered rain showers, highs around 42. And Wednesday, cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 41, northeast wind 10 miles per hour. And Thursday, mostly cloudy. And on Friday, the S word, sunny, highs around 41. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.